This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Yesterday, the Supreme Court declared that the federal government has the right to prosecute people who use marijuana for medical purposes. The case involved two chronically ill women from California, where state law allows patients to possess and consume cannabis on a doctor's recommendation. 10 other states have similar laws. Anti-drug activists hail the decision as a victory. Proponents of medical marijuana say that little will actually change, that the doors of clubs that distribute medical marijuana will not be closing anytime soon. Though a lot of the talk about this case revolved around compassion and about morality, the central legal issue is the long-running argument over states' rights. Does the Commerce Clause of the Constitution give the federal government authority to regulate a substance grown at home for personal use? Yesterday's ruling could affect state laws on other issues, including physician-assisted suicide. Medical marijuana now moves to Congress, but for now, patients who smoke it and doctors who recommend it must determine whether they're willing to risk federal prosecution. Later in the program, homicide rates fall for the first time in 5 years. We'll talk with a criminologist and ask why. But first, medical marijuana. If you or a family member use marijuana for medical purposes, how will the Supreme Court ruling affect your life? We'd also like to hear from doctors on either side of the argument. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. To get a better understanding of the decision, we turn now to David Savage, Supreme Court reporter for the Los Angeles Times. He's with us here in Studio 3A. David, always nice to have you on the program.
Hi, Neil.
First of all, to begin with, to what extent are the laws that legalize marijuana for medical reasons in 11 states now moot? This decision did not strike down the state laws.
No, it didn't. It weakens them, but it leaves the laws on the books. And the laws still have real practical significance, because if you live in California, for example, and you're a medical marijuana user or someone in your family is, the law still stands that the state and local police should not arrest you and the state court should not prosecute you. 90% of law enforcement in the United States is state and local, so those laws are still significant. On the other hand, you've got a problem if you run into a DEA agent or a federal prosecutor, because the federal agents can, and they say they will, come after you. But the laws are still significant because it keeps the local police from going after people who are using medical marijuana.
Did the justices explain in their decision why they said the federal government has this authority, but they did not strike down state laws?
Well, they were being asked to decide, is does the federal government have the power to enforce this kind of law in a state, particularly a state that's made a different choice? And they said yes on two grounds. One is the interstate commerce power does go this far. And number two, there's a supremacy clause in the Constitution that says the laws of the United States will be the supreme law of the land. And if Congress says something, then the federal law trumps the state law. But they didn't really need to go as far as to say the state can't. In the end, the state can sort of do what it wants to do with its own people. They don't have to go around and enforce federal laws if they don't want to. And in this case, California and 10 states have chosen not to enforce the law.
So those state laws are not unconstitutional.
That's correct.
Okay. Now, the case was also sent back to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals because the women who brought this case, the two chronically ill women from California, well, they won in the Ninth Circuit level on this states' rights issue, but they also had other issues, and the Ninth Circuit will now decide those.
Yes, they will, and I don't think they've got a real good chance, but who knows? The Ninth Circuit may come up with some theory that we haven't thought of as to why this is unconstitutional or illegal on some other grounds. But yes, technically it goes back to the Ninth Circuit now.
And let me ask you also, there was a very interesting split in this 6-3 decision on this issue.
Yes, absolutely. If you would just look at this and just look at the subject, medical marijuana, and the Bush administration is going after these people, you might guess the liberals would be on the side of the marijuana users, and the conservatives would back the Bush administration. It was almost the opposite of that. The court really viewed this as a dispute about the big picture, which is the reach of federal power. And this comes up in a lot of different manifestations, but think of this one: environmental protection, wetlands, endangered species. What is it that gives the federal government the power to say you can't kill an endangered lizard that lives in the California desert. It's because there's a very broad reach of federal commerce power. And the liberal justices are very determined to try to maintain that broad federal power. It's been about minimum wages earlier in the 20th century, workplace laws, civil rights laws, now environmental laws. And so the liberal members of the court were very much inclined to say, yes, the federal government has very broad power. The conservatives have been much more inclined to say federal power should be limited. There should be some points where the federal government can't invade local matters. And so you had people like Chief Justice Rehnquist and Justice O'Connor and Justice Thomas voting against the Bush administration in this case and saying the federal power doesn't go that far. But yet the court's liberal bloc, Justice Stevens, Souter, Ginsburg, and Breyer, saying, yes, we're going to maintain this broad view we have that if we're not saying it's right, but that Congress can extend the federal power even to homegrown marijuana in a state where the voters think that should be legal.
Clarence Thomas ridiculed the argument, saying if the federal government has this authority, pretty soon quilting bees will be under the federal regulation.
Yes, he said it's hard to imagine what the limit might be. If a homegrown product that you're using for yourself for medicine can be regulated by the federal government, what's the limit?
Now, you mentioned some of the other areas where this states' rights and federal power argument goes, but the next one to come up, at least so far as I know, is physician-assisted suicide in the state of Oregon.
Yes, absolutely, and it has a lot of similarities. The state of Oregon has made its own choice, the only state to say physician-assisted suicide is okay. They've said their doctors can prescribe a lethal medication for somebody who is terminally ill within 6 months of dying. The Bush administration has said under the Controlled Substances Act, physicians can only use drugs for medical purposes, and it's not a legitimate medical purpose to prescribe a drug that will end someone's life. Very similar. I have a hunch, though, that some of the dispute may be different on the court, because the one difference is the Oregon case coming up in the fall is an interpretation of the federal statute. It's not this big question, constitutional question, about the reach of federal power.
Which the justices may still be looking for an issue to decide upon.
Right. I don't have as good a sense. I bet the split won't be just the same in the Oregon case, but it sure looks on the surface pretty similar going into it.
We're talking about yesterday's Supreme Court ruling on medical marijuana. If you'd like to join the conversation, 800-989-8255. Email us, TOTN@npr.org. And Greg is with us on the line from San Francisco.
Hello.
Hi, Greg. You're on the air.
I work at a cannabis dispensary in San Francisco named the Green Cross, and walking into work, noticing that every channel was turned to CNN and realizing that the Raich decision versus Ashcroft actually went down against us, it really confused a lot of our patients, you know. None of them want to go to jail for anything, you know, just for taking medicine because they can't walk. That's the main problem, you know. Most people realize that there's states versus the feds, and they don't want, you know, SWAT team and DEA coming through their house raiding their plants or raiding their paraphernalia that they use for their medicine. Most of the time, they just want to be happy and content that they can take their medicine in a safe manner and that they don't have to worry about any type of ridicule or judgment or any type of anti-sentiment that's acquainted to it. Because, of course, there are criminals out there that are going to persecute and going to get laws thrown at them because they're doing other things other than just taking something for their medicine.
Yeah. Greg, the case actually, by the time it got to the Supreme Court, became Raich versus Gonzalez. We'd had a change of attorney general by that time. But David Savage, if there's confusion, there might be reason for confusion. People don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, it certainly is not very comforting to be told that on the one hand, you have a right under state law to do something, and the Supreme Court says, no, you don't have a right under federal law. I suppose how this is going to play out initially is we'll be interested to see how aggressively federal prosecutors and federal agents want to pursue this. I assume they've got better things to do with their time and resources than to go after individual sick people who are using medical marijuana. I did get the sense of talking to people when this case was coming up that John Ashcroft in particular wanted to sort of make it understood that California and the other states couldn't make this legal and sort of willy-nilly violate the federal drug laws. But I'll be real surprised if the federal government and the Bush administration invests a lot of resources in pursuing individual cases of patients. I could be wrong. I could be surprised. But I think they would want to go after traffickers in some sense, traffickers in drugs, not individual users.
Greg, thanks very much for the phone call.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
David, before we let you go, there was practically an appeal in the majority decision yesterday to in the majority opinion yesterday to bring this case up before Congress.
Yes, that's absolutely right. Justice Stevens said these women make a very strong case that they have a real need for this drug, and it is beneficial to them. They said it was uniquely effective in relieving their pain. Their doctors have tried many other things, and that while the court is saying Congress can enforce this law, the court was not saying it's a wise law. It may be time for Congress to reconsider this. I understand every year or so, Barney Frank has tried to get some action on this to change the law to say physicians can prescribe this. He usually has fallen badly short in the votes. It's possible that some of the outcry over this decision will cause at least some more members of Congress to think twice about this issue.
We believe that there's a vote scheduled for next week in the House of Representatives on a bill that would bar the federal government from spending any money to enforce this law, which would maybe even make it more confusing. But we'll have more about that later. David Savage, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Neil.
David Savage, Supreme Court reporter for the Los Angeles Times, with us here in Studio 3A. When we come back from a short break, we'll talk with the Attorney General of the state of Montana, one of 11 states that authorizes use of medical marijuana, and find out what his state is going to be doing after the Supreme Court decision yesterday. You can also join the conversation, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, TOTN at NPR.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about medical marijuana and yesterday's Supreme Court decision. And currently, 11 states have laws that allow marijuana to be used for medical purposes. Montana is the most recent to put such a provision on the books. Mike McGrath is the state's attorney general. He joins us now by phone from his office in Helena. Nice to have you on Talk of the Nation.
Well, thanks for having me.
What's your reaction to yesterday's ruling?
Well, it's creates an interesting conundrum, if you will. We have a situation where state law authorizes people to use marijuana for medicinal purposes, and we have a procedure and a registry that people get on to do that. And then we have the federal law now that is clear, makes the possession of marijuana for whatever purpose illegal. So people that are going to use medical marijuana in Montana have run the risk of being prosecuted by the federal system.
But not by the state of Montana?
No, not by the state. It's legal in terms of the state, and so we will not be prosecuting people in state court for marijuana violations.
Well, you said you have a registry. If the federal government asked you for a copy, would you give it to them?
There is a process where law enforcement can obtain access to the registry. That's the purpose of the registry. It was designed so that, let's say, if you're a sheriff in a small county and somebody calls in and gives you a report that so-and-so is growing marijuana, well, one of the things that law enforcement can do in the course of their investigation is access the registry to determine if that person is authorized to grow marijuana for medicinal purposes.
But again, if the feds wanted a copy of that, would you hand it over?
Yeah, they would get that. They have, as a a law enforcement agency, they would have access to that.
Up to now, has there been any instances in Montana where the federal authorities have seized marijuana from somebody who was licensed to either grow it or use it for medicinal purposes?
No. As you mentioned, we are the latest state to have done this. This initiative was passed by the voters last November, so it's fairly new.
Is your sense that anything is fundamentally going to change?
Well, I think that this will have a chilling effect on people who want to use medicinal marijuana. Right now we have, I think it's 93 people that are on the registry with, and there are 40 caregivers that are also listed. How they choose to proceed is going to be hard to tell at this point.
Would you have any advice for them?
I don't have any advice for them. I think that it's kind of up to the Bush administration at this point to make some decisions of how they're going to handle this. And again, it's as you're were saying earlier, there's an opportunity here for Congress to step in. I mean, they could create an exception to the drug laws that they have passed for states that authorize medical marijuana.
Mike McGrath, thanks very much. Appreciate it.
You bet.
Mike McGrath, Attorney General for the state of Montana, joined us by phone from his office in Helena. To get a better sense of where the battle over medical marijuana is headed, we're going to speak with advocates on both sides. First, we'll go to a proponent of medical marijuana. Robert Raich was lead attorney on the Gonzalez versus Raich case, which the Supreme Court ruled on yesterday. His wife, Angel, was one of the plaintiffs in that case. He joins us now from a studio at the University of California at Berkeley. Good of you to be with us today on Talk of the Nation.
It's my pleasure to be here.
How big a loss was yesterday's ruling?
Well, yesterday's ruling really just preserves the status quo that existed the day before we ever filed that lawsuit. The federal government claims that medical cannabis is illegal, and the state law continues to protect patients in California and the 11 other states with laws that protect patients. So really, nothing has changed that way. By filing this lawsuit, we had much to gain, but nothing to lose.
Well, as Attorney General McGrath just told us from Montana, there's certainly going to be a chilling effect. People may not want to risk being arrested by the DEA.
That was always right. The DEA claimed it had all along. Of course, it is a question. Does the federal government want to squander its resources on patients who are trying to do nothing better than keep themselves healthy or alive, or should it be fighting terrorists and using its resources other ways? That's something for the federal government, but I think it's clear the people of this country overwhelmingly support the obvious notion that patients deserve the right to have the medicine that keeps them healthy. Mm-hmm. Every single poll has shown that between 70 and 80% of the American people support medical cannabis.
Where do you go from here?
Well, the next step is Congress. The Supreme Court yesterday, in the final paragraph of its majority opinion, essentially called on Congress to change these laws. And as you mentioned, there is an opportunity as early as next week in the House of Representatives for Congress to do just that. Representatives Hinchey and Rohrabacher, a Democrat and a Republican, have co-sponsored an amendment to the Department of Justice Appropriations Bill that would prohibit the spending of any money to prosecute patients in states in which medical cannabis is legal.
Well, the last time I believe this measure came up in the House of Representatives, it lost by a, I don't remember the exact margin, but a thumping margin.
It lost by about 70 votes last time. And while 70 votes is significant, it is not something that cannot be overcome, particularly when you have six justices of the Supreme Court essentially calling on Congress to make that change.
Let's get a caller on the line. This is Evelyn. Evelyn's calling from Philadelphia.
Yes, I don't understand this whole situation because in Europe and in Canada, they can give you the component of marijuana that takes away the pain in a sublingual liquid, so you don't have to smoke it and you don't have to get everything else that's in marijuana. You just get the part of it that kills the pain.
Robert Raich, I think she's talking about THC.
That's right. I think she may be talking about a product called Sativex, which has now been approved for use in Canada. It is a natural cannabis extract. It's not available to patients in the United States. And we don't know if it will work for all patients. If it helps some patients, that's wonderful. But it turns out that some patients really need or prefer find the natural plant to be the best form of relief. There's also a pill out there, which is a synthetic form of one of the active ingredients in natural cannabis called Marinol. It works, again, for a minority of patients, but most patients really find that the natural herb works best for them.
Smoking.
They don't have to. Smoking it is only one route of ingestion. It can be eaten. It can be taken in tincture form. It can be vaporized. It can be inhaled. It can be made into an oil or put on the skin as a balm. Mm-hmm. There are many ways for patients to find the relief they need. And I should also mention that contrary to a popular misconception, many patients do not experience any kind of psychoactive effect by using medical cannabis.
They don't get high.
That's right. Many people do not get high.
Evelyn, I'm sorry. I heard you trying to get in there.
Yeah, I was wondering, are any of these other ways that the gentleman was talking about available in the United States?
You can go to any of the cannabis dispensaries in California and have a terrific variety of natural
cannabis
products.
I think she was asking whether any of them are legal under federal law, by prescription perhaps.
So you can't go to your doctor and get these?
No. You'd have to live in one of the states that allows medical cannabis and get a recommendation from your doctor, not a prescription, but a recommendation, and then it would be legal for you under your state law to possess or obtain the natural cannabis that you need.
Mm-hmm. But, okay, thanks very much, Evelyn.
Yeah.
Appreciate the phone call. Here's an email question from Kristen in Pennsylvania. To what extent, if any, have lobbyists for the pharmaceutical industry been trying to influence this issue?
I think that the pharmaceutical industry is one of the bigger influences operating behind the scenes. They realize that if there is a safe and effective medicine that actually helps a large number of patients, that those patients can grow themselves for free, a lot of pharmaceutical industry profits are going to go down the drain. And they don't want that. They would rather people use pills or white powders or other expensive pharmaceuticals. It's not that some people can't benefit from those pharmaceuticals. It's just that for many patients, natural cannabis provides the best form of relief for their particular conditions.
As you know, opponents argue that there are other interests involved on your side, that this medical marijuana is a Trojan horse issue for legalization of marijuana for recreational use.
I've heard that argument, but I think that really insults the intelligence of the American people. When the voters in California and every other state on which this matter has been on the ballot vote for medical cannabis by large margins, which is what they have done every single opportunity they've had, those voters are doing so because they recognize that patients need access to medicine. They are not, by and large, voting because they support the legalization of marijuana if for recreational purposes. The voters are smart enough to tell the difference. I think that we just have a problem with the politicians who are still afraid to do anything that might be perceived as being, quote, soft on drugs, unquote. Eventually, the politicians will catch up with the people.
Let's get another caller on the line. This is Jill. Jill's calling from San Diego, California.
Yes, hi. I think the dangerous aspects of this is the access question. Whether or not medical marijuana is effective, so is Vicodin, but I don't get a recommendation from my doctor to go create a pseudo pharmacy in my kitchen and make as much Vicodin as I see fit. And I think with this medical marijuana, it's you get a recommendation and you're allowed to have, you know, a ridiculous amount of marijuana on you. You're allowed to grow a ridiculous amount. And that's just, that's just going to increase access. And for somebody that works with youth and works on issues about drugs and alcohol, I think that sends a very dangerous precedent. And I think when you start talking about whether marijuana is effective, if it's as effective or more effective as any other pill or powder, then treat it as such. And don't give it the freedom that we're giving medical marijuana right now.
Well, I would agree that it is effective and safe medicine, and it should be treated as any other kind of medication. Unfortunately, after seven decades of propaganda, Congress has not chosen to do that. I would take issue with your characterization of patients having a ridiculous amount. Under California law, a patient is allowed to possess or cultivate only the amount necessary for that patient's personal medical needs.
How do you know what that is?
Well, under state law, there is a floor of six flowering plants that patients may have. But the answer to your question directly, the best advice I give to patients is to keep some records of the amount of cannabis they use so they can demonstrate to their doctors and to law enforcement, if necessary, what they do need to satisfy their personal medical needs.
Jill, thanks for the call.
Okay.
And Robert Raich, before we let you go, obviously your wife was one of the principals in this case. She told a news conference yesterday that she, she said earlier that she might have to leave the country to continue to receive marijuana. She says now she will stay on to fight this issue. Can you see, obviously this is personal as well as a legal argument for you.
Of course it is. My wife, Angel, had been considering leaving this country, if necessary, but she really has no choice but to use medical cannabis. It's not an option for her. If she didn't have cannabis, she would probably no longer be with us. Certainly, she would not be able to function as a wife, as a mother. She couldn't even hug her children when she was paralyzed before finding that cannabis uniquely was the one medication that worked for her. She was confined to a wheelchair for 4 years. She's decided now that the United States is her country. She instead is going to stay here and fight to try to change these unjust laws. The fact of the matter is the federal government is playing politics with patients' lives, and it is choosing to ignore the scientific and medical facts that cannabis is a good medicine for many patients. We've just got to bring the laws of this country up into the 21st century, and now is the time for Congress to act.
Robert Raich, thank you very much. We appreciate your time today.
My pleasure.
Robert Raich, one of the lead attorneys in Gonzalez versus Raich, which was lost yesterday in the Supreme Court. He was with us from a studio at the University of California at Berkeley. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. For the other side of the debate, we turn now to Calvina Fay, Executive Director of the Drug-Free America Foundation. She's with us by phone from her office in St. Petersburg, Florida, and it's nice of you to join us today on the program.
Thank you. It's good to be able to join.
As you read the decision yesterday, obviously the majority opinion expressed some compassion for these two women chronically ill. As you hear about them, you must have compassion for their cases.
There's always compassion for people who are sick, and there's very much a concern on our part about people who are truly sick being misled about the merits of a crude, toxic weed that is not FDA approved, that does not have the scientific evidence behind it to demonstrate it's a medicine. You know, people smoke pot and they feel good. People smoke crack cocaine and they feel good. That's why people use drugs. But it does not, by any stretch of the imagination, mean that it's giving them medical treatment. And there just simply isn't the medical science behind it to declare it a medicine.
As you know, proponents say, there's nobody willing to fund the research that might prove that.
Well, that actually is not true. There has already been some research done, and there's ongoing research on the issue. But so far, the evidence does not support the crude weed, all of the compounds of the cannabis plant, as a medicine. The science just simply is not there.
Do you regard yesterday's decision as a triumph?
We believe that it is definitely a victory for the future of our children and for our families. This issue is not really about medicine. It is about the legalization of a mind-altering addictive drug. It's very telling that the groups that finance it and the individuals that finance this issue are people who have publicly admitted they'd like to see not just marijuana, but all drugs legalized for all purposes. I think that's extremely telling. It's not like we...
I think that may be true of some, but surely it's not true of all.
Well, I'm talking about the people that are funding this movement.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have major medical groups coming together up in arms saying this is a miracle medicine of the new century that we need. It's a group of very wealthy business people who admit they would like to see drugs legalized. So that is very telling. You have to look at who's financing the movement. I'm not saying that everybody that thinks there is some benefit from marijuana is a drug legalizer. Don't misunderstand me. Mm-hmm. I'm saying the people that are funding this movement.
We'll continue our conversation with Calvina Fay of the Drug Free America Foundation when we come back from a break and take more of your calls and emails. Our number, if you'd like to join us, is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is TOTN@NPR.org. We'll also take a look at the FBI's new numbers on violent crime. What's happening where you live? Are murders and homicides and rapes up or down? 800-989-8255. We'll be back after the break. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Now we're wrapping up our discussion on medical marijuana. Our guest is Calvina Fay, Executive Director of the Drug Free America Foundation. And let's get another caller on the line. This is Al. Al's calling from San Antonio, Texas.
Yes, the issue of marijuana being for medicinal purposes, it seems to me that it's only reasonable that it should be treated just like all other medicines. In other words, the FDA should grant its approval based on appropriate studies. There are many drugs available that are more dangerous than marijuana that are approved on a prescription basis. As far as someone growing these things at home and having recreational use, well, of course, poppies could be grown at home, but it's illegal. So if we're going to consider this as a medicine, then I think it should be channeled in the same fashion that all other medicines should be channeled. And as far as whether or not it provides curative effects, you know, there are many medicines that are now available that give the patients relief, especially those with terminal illnesses or very difficult illnesses. And those drugs give relief, but they don't cure. So if the issue is whether marijuana should be a medicine, then let's treat it like a medicine and go through the FDA channels.
Calvina Fay?
I happen to agree with the comments of the caller completely, and that is the issue that we keep raising. If this is indeed a medicine, then let's put it to the test. Let's take it to the FDA. Let's have it examined. Let's have our double-blind studies. We have a process in this country that's established for a very good reason, and it's to protect the public, because otherwise you have people out there calling anything and everything medicine just to make money off of people. And you put
sure, snake oil salesman, yeah.
You know, where do you draw the line? I mean, is crack cocaine a medicine too? Is LSD a medicine? There has to be a process that we follow, and we have that established in the country. And to bystep it is very dangerous. And the other problem with these initiatives, the way they're set up right now, contrary to what one of the callers said previously, not this caller that was just on, but another caller said that it's only for you're only allowed to have in your possession enough to treat your condition, and that's not true. In the state of California, the state initiative did not define how much, and each city has created their own rules on that. And for example, in Sacramento, they tried to pass an ordinance there that would let people possess up to 30 pounds of pot at one time. I think they settled on something like 12 pounds, but that's still far too excessive. That's over a year's supply of steady smoking. And there's not a medicine out there that's legal and legitimate that we can get a prescription for that you could possess that much of a drug at one time. So, you know, these initiatives are wide open. They're not limited to the type of medical condition that you might have. I mean, we've documented people smoking pot to treat athlete's foot, to treat headaches, backaches, menstrual cramps. It's anything and everything that people want to use as an excuse to smoke pot.
Well, with the doctor's recommendation, I think, was part of the law, and I don't think you would get too many doctors to recommend it for athlete's foot. Al, thank you very much for the call.
The problem is the doctors don't monitor it, and many times people get these recommendations and they're never even actually seen by a doctor.
Let me ask you a question. Earlier had the Attorney General from the state of Montana, one of the 11 states where medical marijuana is currently legal, on the line, and he expressed some confusion about what is actually going to happen, what the practical effect of this Supreme Court decision was. The state laws were not struck down. Do you now expect federal agents to be arresting medical marijuana users?
Well, I think that it's pretty clear, and even those that are advocates for the legalization of marijuana have admitted that we don't currently have a situation in this country where the federal law enforcement agents are breaking down the doors and arresting sick and dying people. That's not happening in the country, and it's not been happening in the country. I think that our federal agents will continue to enforce our federal drug laws, but typically you don't have sick and dying people going to prison for this. What you have are your drug traffickers that are having to answer for peddling drugs to our kids, and I certainly hope that our federal agents will continue to enforce those drug laws. The problem with these initiatives is it's opened the door for people to not only use drugs and distribute drugs, traffic in drugs, and of course their excuse is always, you know, we're doing this for medicinal purposes. And how do you differentiate? It needs to be, just like the previous caller said, if it's truly medicine, it needs to go before the FDA, it needs to have all the studies behind it, it needs to be found scientifically to be a medicine, and then it needs to be regulated and controlled appropriately. Otherwise, you have what we're experiencing right now in this country, total chaos with anybody and everybody smoking pot, claiming it's medicine when there's no medical science behind it and there's no control to it.
Let's get another caller on the line. This is Tay. Tay's with us from Charlotte, North Carolina.
Yes, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I think it's very irresponsible for, and I'm sorry that I cannot remember her name.
Calvina Fay.
Alvina, excuse me for that. To keep saying that it's total chaos and to compare medical marijuana to crack cocaine, that's irresponsible. It's a gross exaggeration. I am saddened and outraged with the mean-spiritedness of the federal government in this. When I was 18 years old, lost my mother to cancer. It was incredibly, excruciatingly painful for her. And we did end up getting her some marijuana, and it did help her, and I am grateful for that, and I would do it again. To run something to the FDA, for goodness sakes, the FDA doesn't know why aspirin works. And their record recently is not very it's not very good. I don't understand why we're spending money and time on this when there are so many greater issues. She's talking about protecting the children. There are 30,000 children a day that die in this world from starvation. Let's spend our time and resources there.
Calvina Fay will give you the opportunity to respond.
Well, I certainly would take a difference to labeling me as being irresponsible to defy our federal drug laws and to decide on a whim that we can call anything and everything medicine without going through proper process that protects people is what's irresponsible. Clearly, you cannot just have people voting on what is and isn't medicine. I mean, the average voter doesn't have the time or the wherewithal to look at the research behind it. There has to be. If we're going to call ourselves a civilized society and we're going to have a process in our country to protect people, there has to be a process there. And I think, contrary to what the caller has said, the FDA has done its job. We've had...
I think she's talking about examples like Vioxx and,
exactly,
and other things that they tested and found out were much riskier than they thought.
But that's exactly what I'm speaking about. It's important that those drugs were taken off the market. The FDA did do their job. As research evolved, it became very clear that those drugs were not safe. And because the FDA was involved in the process, those drugs were removed from the market.
I'm afraid
what we have with marijuana now is we have no regulation to it in the name of medicine, and nobody looking after those people who are being harmed by it.
Tay, thanks very much for the call. I'm afraid we're going to have to end it here. But
you're most welcome. Thank you for having me.
And Calvina Fay, we also thank you for your time. Calvina Fay, Executive Director of the Drug-Free America Foundation, joined us by phone from her office in St. Petersburg, Florida. Coming up next, new crime statistics, murder on the decline.